Now, more Ebling and You on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back, Jack Ebling, Scott Eckersley, Ebling and You, 1320 WILS, Hour 2 for Monday, August 30th, 2010. Very happy to welcome back to the show a guest we haven't talked to in several months, and that is 8th District Congressman Mike Rogers. Hello, Mike.
Jack, thanks for lowering your standards and letting me back on the radio.
Hey, you are welcome anytime, believe me. Hey, I want to talk to you a little bit about federal funding for 211 call service. How important is this?
Well, I think it's incredibly important, and it is a way that we can leverage dollars. So even in a time where people like me are saying the government spends too much money, and it does, this is a way that we leverage a little bit of money and get help for a lot of people by using this public-private partnership. And what 211 is, Jack, is somebody calls up, and it is not a 911 emergency, but it might be an emergency in their house. They're getting ready to lose their home. They have run out of money, and they've run out of food all at the same time, and they still got 2 weeks left in the month. Where can they go? How do they get hooked up with charities? So 211 allows, and it's done through the United Way, allows a great group of people to connect people who are truly in need to get their problems solved anywhere in the community. And it's not necessarily a government agency. It could be, a private, as we said, a private food bank or a private group that's gotten together to help people through foreclosure problems, all of those things. So it's a one-stop shop, gets them the help that they need. And I really think it's an important program. Other places that did it, we did it in our home county, my home county, Livingston County, and it's been just incredibly successful and an important program for the folks who need it.
All right. You are going to be joined by Scott Zirka, president of the Michigan Association of United Ways, and Ingham County Commissioner Don Vickers, and you're going to be talking about this program tomorrow afternoon, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We're going to kind of kick it off, and I'm honored to be a part of it, and great people who are going to help us get this thing up and going.
All right. This is at the Ingham County Public Health Department. Many of you know where this is. It's at 5303 South Cedar Street in Lansing, South Lansing. It's Conference Room C, the Ingham County Public Health Department. Is this a nonpartisan issue? It seems as if so often, Mike, there's a gridlock or a division in Washington and equally so in Lansing, but this seems to be something that could have a lot of people behind it on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, this should be absolutely nonpartisan. It is, you pick up the phone, you dial 211, you get connected to somebody that can help you out, and it covers a whole host of people. And when you're dialing that number, you're not a Republican, you're not a Democrat, you're not a Tea Party member, you're not a whatever. You're not a Green Party person. You are a person in need. And it really is a nonpartisan issue, and it is a bipartisan effort in order to get this accomplished. As a matter of fact, I'm a co-sponsor of the national bill with Anna Eshoo, a Democrat from California, and it just makes so much sense that we would want to leverage every dollar that we have to accomplish what is a government and private partnership to get these people the best help in the quickest way possible.
How do we get more of this kind of bipartisanship? How do we get people on both sides of the aisle working together for the public interest?
Well, I think I never, went to Congress to be a Republican. I went to Congress to be a U.S. representative. And, and I think most people's hearts are the same way. I am an eternal optimist, but I don't think I'm naive. And something happens when they get there. The party structures kind of kick in, and there is some philosophical difference. And what I think happens is, so you have the parties working for control, and you have real philosophical differences that deserve a debate, all colliding in, and it stops all the good things that can happen, like a bill like this that most members, 99% of them should be for. It is bipartisan. It is nonpartisan, if you will. And you just have to, I think, have strong enough folks to stand up and kind of put forth these ideas in a bipartisan way to get through it. And when you have the massive bills, you know, the health care bill or the cap and trade, whatever it is, that is where you're going to run into these really sharp-elbowed debates because the philosophical difference is so huge. So sometimes you can do a lot by doing little things like this bill.
Mm-hmm. Mike, we had a conversation a couple weeks ago with former Michigan Governor William Milliken, the longest-serving governor in Michigan history, and we talked about building consensus and how important that was to do without giving up your principles. And he did that very well when he was governor working with Detroit Mayor Coleman Young, and they couldn't agree on what day it was with Coleman Young a lot of the time, but they were able to get a lot of things done for the state of Michigan. And Governor Milliken said that in today's political climate, he wasn't sure he was electable. What has changed?
Well, I have to tell you, one of the things that I didn't like it when it got passed, and it was used as a political weapon, and I think has just done nothing but harm political acumen around everywhere in the state of Michigan, around the country, is this third-party empowerment. When they did campaign finance reform, mm-hmm. it created these third-party groups who do nothing but get up in the morning. They raise money, they get donors, and their whole job is to get up in the morning and say, boy, I hate that Mike Rogers, and I've got to figure out how to get a whole bunch of other people to hate him. I don't care what he's doing.
Right.
And, you know, and that's a huge problem.
What do we do about that?
Yeah, well, you know, I would love to go back and revisit campaign finance reform. And I know people said, oh, you know, the parties are bad and it was terrible and they're mean to each other. But at least you knew who it was. And I would go back to a system where at least you've got to put transparency back in it so that you know when they say, this is the Committee for Children and Happiness and Sunshine on every given day, that you really know that that's some third-party group that has a very narrow, very partisan agenda. And if we don't get back to that, this is just going to get worse. Because remember, these are huge operations that their full-time effort is to really say bad things about the other guy. And think about it, 10 years ago you didn't have that.
Right.
You didn't have these groups that their whole mission was to destroy the credibility, destroy the person's integrity and character. I mean, that's what this is all about now, and I think it's horribly unfortunate, and I think it served to sharpen everybody's political elbows, and I just really don't think it's been helpful.
Well, you're echoing some words we heard not too long ago from former Congressman Joe Schwartz, who had exactly the same sentiment about these third-party organizations. I want to talk to you a little bit about the United States presence in Afghanistan. I know that you've taken a very strong interest in what the United States has been doing in Iraq and Afghanistan. And is there a way out? We know that the military presence, the active fighting presence in Iraq is no longer there. But how long are we in Afghanistan, and do you see a light at the end of the tunnel?
Well, and just to pointed out, we are in Iraq. We have some 50,000 troops, just under 50,000 troops.
Mm-hmm.
Many are infantry-trained combat troops. So some notion that there's not combat troops there just is simply not correct. And
okay.
it is getting better. Hopefully we can continue the scale down. That was the plan all along. And, you know, I just don't want to forget about those folks who are there. They're doing a tough mission still.
Mm-hmm.
And I want Americans to be with them all the way till the day they get on those planes and come home. In Afghanistan, I have to tell you, this is a different animal, and I'm not so sure lifting up the Iraq plan and dropping it in on Afghanistan is going to work. And I get a little concerned about it. It's a place that doesn't have a middle class. Iraq had a middle class.
Mm-hmm.
They had something that they could put together. They had infrastructure that was there. And I have to tell you, as you know, I've been to Afghanistan frequently to meet with our intelligence and troops. If you find some infrastructure, you've done something pretty amazing there. So the culture of Afghanistan is very different than the culture of Iraq. And I am not convinced a large presence for a long time is a good idea there. And we're going to, I hope that we can come together and sit down and in Washington and kind of come up with a plan that works to what is the national security interests of the United States on this one.
Is the United States making a difference in Afghanistan in terms of Al-Qaeda?
Well, I do believe that. I mean, we have clearly denied them places they used to operate freely, and I think that's very, very important. It was clearly a safe haven. That part has gone away. But now you have this Al-Qaeda-Taliban relationship, and I have specialized in the tribal regions of Pakistan along the Afghan border. And I describe it to people, and they say, well, the Taliban isn't Al-Qaeda, isn't the Taliban in the tribal areas of Pakistan. But just like the five organized crime families in New York, you know, if you're stepping on their territory, there's going to be a fight. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to get hurt. If you all sit down at the table and work it out, we'll do bad things together. And that's exactly what we see that had happened. And so Al-Qaeda and Taliban and the Haqqani network are all kind of working together. They all have their own individual games, and that makes it incredibly dangerous. So denying them the safe haven, absolutely. I think that has happened. But what we're doing now with the Taliban is just makes me scratch my head a little bit. And how we've restricted the soldiers' ability to defend themselves concerns me greatly. So, I mean, there's some issues that we've got to get over, and we've got to decide who we are. If we're going to go over there with big guns and big army, then you have to act like that. And if that's not what you're going to do, then I think you got to rethink the plan completely.
Yeah, and without a permanent presence, or at least a long-standing one, doesn't this all go back to the way it used to be the day the United States leaves?
Well, I'm just not convinced it's going to take 100,000 troops to do that. I think you can have an impact with smaller groups mm-hmm. that are going to be there for a little while, and then training. You got to continue to train the Afghan military and the Afghan police. You know, the goal here, just like in Iraq, they're going to continue to have problems and bombings, but the Iraqi police and defense structure is going to be able to protect itself. And what we're trying to do in Afghanistan, I think, is to try to recreate the fact that you want the Afghan police and the Afghan security force to protect itself and to push back the Taliban. Clearly today they are not capable of doing it too far outside of Kabul. That's why they need us. And what we want to do is get them there as quick as we can. And at the same time, I just don't know if having that many troops there exposes us to more harm than it does good. And we're hopefully we'll be talking about that in the next few weeks.
Last question, Mike. I haven't spoken to your opponent about this, but I don't know anyone else who would consider you to be in jeopardy as the 8th District Congressman. What about the way this is going to turn out after Election Day? Are the Republicans going to be in control of the House of Representatives?
Well, I mean, certainly, listen, as a guy, Jack, that won by about 88 votes in my first congressional election, you know, I'd never say never. And, you know, I think people are truly looking for people who are going to go in and get a handle on deficit spending and do those things. I think at the end of the day, just me getting around the district and around the state, and people are clearly passionately committed to getting out and voting in this election, and I think that bodes well for the Republican Party. I do think that we're going to take control of the House. I think we're going to come darn close in the Senate. So, but, you know, again, this election is 60 days away, a little over 60 days away, and anything can happen.
Mike, I'd like to talk to you again in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, good luck tomorrow.
Hey, thank you, sir. I appreciate it very much, and we look forward to kicking it off in, as you said, a nonpartisan, bipartisan way.
Mike Rogers, 8th District Congressman, our guest on Ebling and You. We'll be right back with more after this check of weather and sports.